tuned in to the financial motivator himself, Ash Cash, Mr. Mind Right Money Right.
Hey, welcome to another special episode of the Ash Cash Show. You know I'm bringing you only the best of the best. And during this time, we have COVID-19, we have pandemics, we have shelter in places, we have civil unrest, we have a lot going on, and I can only imagine, not even only imagine, I'm actually participating in it with everybody, the amount of mental health awareness that is necessary during these times is necessary. You know what I'm saying? So I wanted to bring somebody on who is really versed on how to cope, how to manage, how to survive, how to thrive mentally during these times. This is a special episode that you do not want to miss. Tap in, tune in. Let's get it.
We can talk, but money talk, so talk more.
Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show. The Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show. The Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show. The Ash Cash Show, show, show. Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show. The Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show. The Ash Cash Show, Ash Cash Show.
All right, so welcome to another special edition of the Ash Cash Show. As you know, I'm always excited about the guests that I bring on because the guests that we're bringing on are people that I respect, people who are at the top of their field, who are doing their thing. So I got my sister, Asha Tari, in the building, who is a certified life coach, author, and award-winning mental health advocate. As a mindfulness practitioner, she's coached and consulted individuals and groups of people throughout the United States, Asia, Africa, and Europe on personal development, lifestyle, and wellness. She's consulted with initiatives on mental health, global work retention, and been a writer and speaker for several outlets focused on mental health. Her work spans two decades and includes working with families, couples, professional adults, millennials, and people with anxiety and work-life balance. Ladies and gentlemen, round of applause for my sister, Asha Tari. How are you?
I'm great. You made me sound awesome.
Nice.
Thank you, bro.
You know, I gotta match it for what it is, you know, because the work that you're doing out here, especially now during this time, it's been important, but now when I could only imagine how it's probably quadruple, meaning the people that actually need your help and your work now because of, you know, everybody sort of going through it. And so I just want to start there, right? Like in, you know, as a psychotherapist, as somebody who's in this space, tell me your thoughts overall about, you know, what's going on with, you know, you have pandemics, you have, civil unrest, like there's a lot going on. And I could imagine what it's doing to our brains and mental health. You know, what's your view and what's the landscape looking like right now?
Let me say thank you for having this platform to talk about this and inviting me on to talk about it. It really means a lot to me. You mean a lot to me. Us doing this work together means a lot to me. So as always, when I'm spoken to you, I'll be as candid as I can be. I'll say this simply. There is a co-awakening going on with Black and white people at the same time. It looks different, but there's a co-awakening. White folks are awakening to their own suppressed feelings, confronted by their own whiteness and the fragility of that, the misuse of that, while Black people are also waking up to their suppressed feelings, their years of accommodating whiteness and internalized racism. So while that's happening simultaneously, people are also grieving. They're grieving what they once knew about themselves. They're grieving what they once knew about their friends, their coworkers, the places they worked. And they're grieving the unknown things that have yet to come that have affected their lives tremendously, from COVID to this time where there's upheaval and uprising. So there's a lot of emotionality that comes along with it, and we must be patient. Mm-hmm. to let people grieve, to notice, to watch what's happening, and then hopefully to get rest and recover so we can continue to strive to liberate ourselves.
Wow, man, that's powerful. That's powerful. And what do you say to people who are, I mean, honestly, who are like anxious, right? Because like you mentioned, there's a lot of unknowns that are happening, right? So, you know, I think that when you look at 40 million people out of work, COVID, so let's look at COVID-19 first, right? So COVID-19, we have this pandemic that there is no cure yet, or, you know, people are still dying. People are still being infected. The country is opening up, and so people don't know, you know, what to do. There are talks of a second wave, right? And so a second wave happening, you know, later on this year. So people are being cautious about that. But then there are other people who are like, oh, it's not that serious. Let's kind of go out. So there's this uncertainty of what's happening with COVID-19. Then add to that the fact that there are 40 million people out of work. The people who are out of work don't know, you know, what the economy is going to look like, what they're going to do with their life. The people who have jobs right now are trying to figure out, you know, will I have a job in 6 months? I don't know what's going on. And you know, now you add to that this new civil unrest of, you know, what's going on with the black and white relations, you know, in America. Like you said, the awakening that's happening simultaneously with black people and white people. You know, people are anxious, right? Mm-hmm. And so what do you say to people who are anxious, who don't know what's going on? Their whole life has been disrupted, like from the, like obliterated almost. And they just don't know where to go, what to look for, what to do. What do you say to those people?
There's different sects of our society coping in numerous ways, Ash. So let's talk about people who have various privileges, and that's not just white people. It's a privilege right now to be sitting in front of a computer on Wi-Fi in my home where it's quiet talking to you, mm-hmm. right? And I say right because I'm just acknowledging that, and I would assume you agree, but mm-hmm. there are other people who would say they disagree, and that's okay too. And that's an example of people not having to be on the same page or quote unquote in the same boat to still be suffering. And I'm hoping that people will stop comparing suffering. And it's something I've been working on with people pre-COVID in my work with clients individually, is that you may feel anxious some days. You may feel hopeless, despaired, a lot of different things. We can hold room for it in terms of folks who are helpers and healers, as well as people who are bystanders, because witnessing your grief and then allowing someone else to be witnessed is a whole form of self-healing and collaborative healing that I've seen us do before and we could do now. I would say to people who are in distress, which is what you're speaking to specifically, I think, figure out for yourself which thing you have to prioritize first. Because it's impossible to do it all. It's impossible to do the mental gymnastics, as we often call it, to look at the news, turn into social media, have conversations, protest, sign petitions, go to work, look for a job, raise your family, stay well. It's too much. It's too much. Eventually, people just can't do anything else. Their brain will shut down. And if that happens, their body will shut down. Or the reverse, your body will slowly shut down. And then you can't do anything psychologically because it's all interconnected, your mind and your health, your body and your brain. So figure out what you need to prioritize first and do that one thing repeatedly. If that means you have to turn off social media for an entire week and maybe just watch the news one time a day, most likely the news isn't going to change that quick. The news is literally on a loop every single day. So if you watch the news 3-4 times a day, you're mesmerized by the news. Stop allowing yourself to be mesmerized by it. Stop allowing you to go into a trance doing that, because it's not going to typically change in 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So tune in less if you have to, and spend some consecutive number of days focused on your plan of action. So that's to find employment again. That's your focus. If it's to work on your health, so if you have COVID symptoms, you can decrease those so you don't end up on a respirator or in the hospital. If it is to work in spaces that are still uncomfortable for you, then work for your mental health and make that your priority. But I would suggest limiting how much we do at once.
I love that. So two things I want to unpack, because number one, you said stop comparing suffering, right? And I love that because I find that it's happening a lot. And I'll be honest, like I've even done it, right? Where, you know, I'm looking at someone and saying, well, you know, we should all be focusing on this, or we should be all focusing on that. And sometimes not realizing, like you said, that we all are at a different spaces in our journeys, in our lives, in our struggles, in our suffering. And so comparing it, you know, because people grieve differently, making that comparison and looking at somebody different, or looking at them, you know, making an opinion about them because they're not handling things like you handle them, is definitely important. So, you know, I definitely love that. And then the second thing I like what you said, as it relates to just focusing on one thing at a time, because I think that because for a very long time, you know, I mean, specifically here in America, we have been taught that multitasking is a normal way of life. Right. And so because we've been taught that multitasking is a normal way of life, and that because it's a normal way of life, that there should be this work-life balance that exists, we've sort of bought into this space of that there could be this utopia, this perfectness in where we're focusing on all of these things and we get all of these things right. But the fact of the matter is that especially in times like this, you really can't go back to what was a broken system in a way, right? And try to kind of maneuver and fix things in a broken system. It almost seems like it's time to kind of, you know, reset, right? You know, start that system all over again, and then just kind of, start from scratch. And I like, you know, starting that one, you know, that one thing at a time. And so as someone's focusing on that one thing at a time, you know, I know, you know, even for myself, where like I'll say, you know what, I'm only going to focus on, let's say, my family, and I'm focusing on family. I'm doing things with family. But, you know, we still got to eat. I still got to support the family or whatever. And so in my mind, I'm feeling guilty because there's like business stuff that needs to happen. Or if I'm like, I got to focus on my business because, you know, I have to make sure I'm recession proof and, you know, catch up for things I may have lost. But then I feel guilty about maybe, you know, not giving enough attention to my family. And so how do you, and I don't want to use the word balance, right? But how do you kind of cope with that mechanism of guilt that may come up because you're not paying attention to the things that you feel like you need to pay attention to?
Good question. So one of the things I would suggest, and I'm looking down because I'm thinking about something you said as you asked the question. It's important to know your own limitations. Mm-hmm. So doing one thing at a time for someone might mean one thing at a time per day. Mm-hmm. For others, it might mean you do one thing at a time per extended period of time, 7 days or 14 days. Mm-hmm. So as you prioritize one thing at a time per day, that might mean that you focused on your business plan today or an aspect of your business plan today. And then tomorrow you focus on an aspect of your business plan today, but you also spend some time with your family. The next day you focus on an aspect of your business plan, and then you also get out and do physical exercise. You see how it's still you focusing on your business plan every day, mm-hmm. but depending on where you are emotionally and mentally, you might be able to tolerate a little bit more integration. Mm-hmm. So the word that I would call what we're talking about now is very popular is reconciling. People mm-hmm. are reconciling, doing one with another, doing something while doing something else. This idea of task switching, which is formerly known as multitasking, is that idea of I'll turn away from this and turn away onto this and turn away from that and turn onto this. And research has proven your brain does not work at maximum capacity when you multitask or task switch. Your brain tends to focus in on one thing well to an optimal level to start and complete it with fewer mistakes than it does when you switch on and off from one thing to another in a short period of time. So really, we're trying to create brain health, even pre-COVID, pre-uprisings. That should continue. But now your brain has to adapt to multiple things. It has to adapt to change. So when you feel anxious, worried, stressed, out of sorts, it's because your brain is working to adapt to the numerous stimuli coming in. And so that's where slowing down and pacing yourself and choosing what's the thing I can do right now is a mindful way of living. It's going to help people to cope with their stress. It's going to help people to stay physically and mentally well. And it's going to make you feel better when you see the results of sticking to one thing at a time.
No, I love that. I love that answer. Thank you so much for the clarity too, because, you know, definitely, you know, as people are going through this, they're going to need as much, you know, clarity and understanding how to move forward. So appreciate that. And so what's your thoughts? You know, I know me personally, as I'm watching the protests, as I'm watching, you know, everything, you know, unravel, there's a leadership almost in our young people, right? Who are, you know, taking, you know, the role that, you know, the fearlessness, you know, the millennials, the Gen Zs, like they're, you know, taking this role of leadership and really, you know, making their demands. What's your thoughts about the state of our young people here in America now?
I love it. I've always loved it. I've been a proponent for millennials advocating and elevating their voices. I'm not on the bandwagon that I probably was once on, where I think I was programmed to believe that millennials are entitled and lazy and they want everything instantaneously. I would say that once again, there's a segment of that population that might be that way. But we also need to look at ourselves, those who are in Generation X like I am, those who are in the baby boomers who may have raised millennials, and say, what did I not do to provide them with better skills so that they don't necessarily think of themselves as entitled? And what can people like us who are close enough to their age do to mentor them, to reach out and help them to not be so self-centered, right? So everything has its place and everything is reciprocal. So I think it's wonderful. I love it. I'm working to help millennials stay invested in working on themselves and then working within whatever groups they want to be a part of, and to not get tired of that, because it does exhaust one's energy. I'm not going to lie. It's something that could easily burn you out if you have very little tolerance for consistency, which is something you and I talk about often. So it's important. As many people know, in history, movements were always founded by young people. Mm-hmm. Always. Malcolm was young. Martin was young. Elaine Brown was young. Angela Davis was super young when she presented her case to court and defended herself. So it's not new to Black people. It's not new to Latin people to be young and active and political. So I'm happy to see it. I'm glad I'm alive at a time where it's going on. Every day now down my street is a lot of young white people. Black Lives Matter, protesting, rallying, holding signs up. It's a lot of white people who are calling out other egregious white people on social media. So I think it's beautiful. I support
it. Nice. I love it. I love it. And it's funny because on Wednesday, I had a conversation on my radio show, on a live show, and we talked about this generation divide, right? Where you had sort of like, not necessarily Generation X, but you had like the baby boomers and those who were older who, you know, sort of look down on millennials. Like, so for the record, I'm a millennial, but I'm an OG millennial. You know what I'm saying? So I'm a older millennial. So I was raised.
You at the far end of the millennial spectrum. Yeah.
So I was raised X, right? I was raised with X features, but I'm still a millennial. But I remember the divide, you know, even for my generation, when I was coming up, you know, the elders didn't really embrace us, right? They really didn't guide us, and they really didn't get to that space where they were helping develop us with their wisdom, right? And so a lot of, you know, how I had to come up was really trial and error. I had to figure things out myself. And so now we're at a space where, you know, Generation X, you know, your generation, you know, the OG millennials, we're embracing that, right? We're embracing the youngness and we're looking to bridge the gap. And so you have a new book coming out, right? Your new book is called Adulting as a Millennial, A Guide to Everything Your Parents Didn't Teach You. And I love that because it's that, right? I think that's what's needed is this bridge between the OGs and the people that are coming up. So talk to us a little bit about your inspiration for the book, you know, and why you decided to write this book now.
Thank you. It was timely and it's more timely now that it's coming out because I was going through so many transitions. I'm in a really interesting time in my life and of the age that I am because I'm on that cusp of younger exes and older millennials. And so I didn't, to be very honest, for a long time, know exactly what people were attracted to about me, especially when it came to the work, but I would attract all kinds of people from different things. And through my own self-development work, my own mindfulness work, I now have such a keen wisdom on what people are looking for from me and what they are attracted to about me. And so I use that as my own secret sauce to produce this book and to produce the things I'm producing. And so this book was written on another transitional timeline where I was coming out of 2019, like so many people talk about, where it was tumultuous. So it was for me too. And I wasn't quite ready. I didn't have the energy or I thought the mental capacity to do a book. But let me just tell you guys about LinkedIn. I get so many messages from LinkedIn coaches to coach me that it's so unattractive because it just looks like a sales pitch and everyone's copying the same sales pitch. But this one coach did something very strategic, very unique. And he searched me and researched me, found me on LinkedIn, but he didn't go on LinkedIn and sales pitch me. He found my email address. I'm leaving this as a nugget for people to pick this up on and start using this because this is very valuable to how he got me to produce this book that I'm so proud of doing today. He found my email address after he searched me on LinkedIn and he sent me an email introduction. And I missed it because it went into my trash. And then I got another one. And then finally, I was looking through my trash and I found it. And so he had sent me two previous emails I overlooked. And by the third one, I believe it was, he said, hey, if you don't respond to this one, then I'll just leave you alone. But you need to say so. And I actually kind of like that because I like when people are direct with me. So I was like, okay. And I looked him up and saw what he did. And I said, you know, I really liked his style. I liked the way he did this. So in short, I got myself a writing coach as a result of that email thread and then a conversation, which was three phone conversations before I even signed on to him. So he really finessed me and I really appreciated it because I had to think about it. I was ready to write a book. Prior to 2019, I was not. And I had a lot to say. And again, it goes back to what I was speaking to you about because I've lived a lot. I'm still very young. I have a lot more life to live and I'm excited about living life, but I've designed my life to be what it is. And I've worked really strategically on that the past several years. And so during a crisis like COVID, business has been booming. During previous summers, we were in my industry and mental health, it would have gone down. We would have had less clients. I've had more clients, steady clients, 12 months a year. And so as I worked on myself and did all these things, I was saying to myself, I got a lot of life I've lived. I got a lot of stories to tell. But instead of being like an OG, like come sit at the corner of my feet, you know, let's sip some cocoa and talk like people would have done back in the old days. I was like, let me do this in a book that's going to be short, direct, and to the point. Yeah. Let me leave people with some tenets that they could take with them to build off of. And so hence, Adulting as a Millennial was born. And it's primarily for millennials, but Ash, it's also for people in other generations. It's for Generation Xers and Generation Boomers because we got to own up to who we are looking at out here on the streets, who are being, you know, underserved, who are going into corporate jobs in America with zero to little etiquette, with zero to little understanding of building social networks, like real social networks. Like I could call my homeboy and be like, I need this favor. Can you cash in on that immediately? And he say yes. You know, like people do that. We know people that do that. We do that for each other. Mm-hmm. Young people aren't getting that. They're telling me all the time, like someone's calling me for something and I don't even talk to that person, or mm-hmm. someone reached out for help and I don't even know who they are, because you have very little social skills. Mm-hmm. And that's why folks are anxious. So this book is for that anxious professional. That professional, rather, that feels anxiety. Mm-hmm. It's for that professional that deals with imposter syndrome. Going into mm-hmm. the workplace, you got a degree. You've probably gotten some volunteer experience, possibly. You got some life experience, too. Yet, you go into workspaces as a brown or black person, and you're competing with someone of the same caliber as you, yet you don't feel like you belong there. Mm-hmm. Why is that? Mm-hmm. So I talk about imposter syndrome. And lastly, I talk about building mutually beneficial relationships. Stop having these lackluster relationships show up in your life, take up space, and you believe you need to keep them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. If you are not developing yourself, if you're not working on your mind, if you're not figuring out how to make multiple streams of income, like these are my principles. Mm-hmm. If you're not also being a good human being, whatever that means to you, if you're not working on your spiritual development, if you're not someone that I can jive with and laugh with and be honest with and vulnerable with, you don't belong in my circle. Mm-hmm. That's me. But I know that about myself because I've sat and done the work on myself and I've asked myself some tough questions. And so I give people permission to say, don't just accept people to show up in your life and just take up space. If you don't want them there, remove yourself. Mm-hmm. Terminate that relationship if you've done the work to even address the issues you have first. So that's really what this book is about, being tenacious, having integrity, and being mindfully actionable in your life.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And it's and like you said, I think it's timely. I think it's important because, you know, at the end of the day, this divide, this bridge that needs to be, you know, put together because, I'm working on a project. And a lot of times when I think about the OGs, like the plan has been laid out. Right. So from an economic perspective, like, you know, Malcolm, he wrote, where do we go from here? Right. And that's Martin Luther King wrote, where do we go from here? Mm-hmm. You know, Marcus Garvey wrote the book already.
That's right.
You know, Dr. Claude Anderson has Powernomics. Right. So these laws or these things that we are. You know, that we need these solutions have already been laid. And so why start from scratch, right? Why, you know, and I'm just talking personally as a financial educator, why start from scratch and say, okay, you know, let me create this new plan because the other plan didn't work. No, maybe the other plan was solid, but we got to just continue that plan. It's like building generational wealth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, they say the child shall lead. So you take it as far as you can and then you shall see, right? Like as an adult, you take it as far as you can, then you pass the baton. And so this work that has been done already from a financial education perspective, the solutions perspective, we take it, you know, we remix it, we make it understandable, and now we dish it to the younger generation. And so to your point, you know, or you writing the book and it being timely, it's like, why do millennials and even Gen Z need to figure things out when there's OGs and there's people who already have the blueprint who could pass that along? So I love that. I love that. Definitely encourage anybody. If you're a millennial, make sure you pick up the book. If you have a millennial in your life, pick up the book. If you're a Gen Z, pick up the book. You know, definitely, you know, it's something that's important. If somebody wants to pick up the book, where can they find the book?
So we're doing pre-orders and people are like, I want this book. What is it in print? And I'm like, slow down. Pre-orders has only been going on for a week. Yeah. Go to my website, lifecoachasha.com. Very simple. Asha, A-S-H-A. I'm promoting it on social media. So Twitter, Asha Tari, and on Instagram, Asha Tari Mental. And become a professional networker with me on LinkedIn too. So LifeCoachAsha.com is where they can get not only my book, but some helpful tools during this time and season with what's happening in the world, because we're adding some more products there. But the pre-orders have just kicked off last week. Thank you for supporting me and getting yours. So many people in the first day supported me with that. So we're going to continue pre-sales for about another week. It's only been week two. We're in the middle of week two. So it'll be out soon. I promise it won't disappoint. I will do my best to make sure everyone gets that copy this month. And we'll keep pushing it out there. I think those principles are going to be lifelong lessons for a lot of people.
No, I love it. I love it. I know you are high in demand, so I don't want to hold you too long. Any last words for the people or words of encouragement or anything that you can leave them?
Yes. There is a concept such as compassionate self-care justice. Mm. Compassionate justice looks like treating yourself well while also being active in your life. And however that may look to the individual might look different to the group. It's okay. Be your individual self while you're also a part of maybe one or more groups, noticing what you need, noticing how to give kindness to yourself, how to be gentle with yourself, how to be patient with yourself, and not make explanations available to people who aren't doing work on themselves either.
Nice. No, I love it. I love it. All right, one more time. Where can the people find you?
So go to Instagram at Asha Tari Mental, Twitter at Asha Tari, and LinkedIn. And then, of course, book a coaching session or a compassionate journal session with me at lifecoachasha.com.
Asha Tari, I appreciate you, my sister. Thank you so much for all you do online, offline, just being a dope human being. Appreciate you. And, you know, definitely make sure you go to follow her, go to her website, make sure you support the book. I am Ash Cash. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to this special episode of the Ash Cash Show. I'll see y'all on Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., the Ash Cash Show. We're live, ashcashtv.com, theashcashshow.com, and I'll see y'all next time. Same time, same place.
Peace. Peace.
You are now tuned in to the Ash Cash Show, your number one source for financial motivation. Get your mind and your money right.